This episode is brought to you by HighSpots.com. HighSpots.com is the leading provider of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts merchandise. From wrestling boots to wrestling DVDs, wrestling action figures to title belts, HighSpots.com has the largest selection of wrestling merchandise. Go there right now with our link, tinyurl.com/STS HighSpots. STSHIGHSPOTS. Shop there with that link. It won't cost you any extra, but it will help support this podcast.
Have you listened to episode 54? It's my old buddy Will Gibson, the referee, talking about future Hall of Famer Jeff Jarrett. Download and listen now.
Number four, and I know this guy has been real important in your career, especially recently. He grabbed you for the initial, like you said, a Las Vegas tapings, and they're actually airing those right now on pay-per-view on the Fight. It's FITE app, Fight app, and that's Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, Jeff, I worked with Jeff over the years a lot, but, you know, like you said, most recently in the last couple of two, 3 years, more so than you know, anyone else. Got the call to do the, you know, the Global Force stuff from Sanjay Dutt. He called me and, you know, told me that I was going to be a part of that. And I have to, you know, honestly say thank you to Brandon Baxter. If it wasn't for Brandon, then none of that would have happened, I don't think. I didn't get any kind of special treatment because, you know, with the Memphis Wrestling or knowing Jeff, you know, prior to the Global Force stuff, it was, I was just like everybody else. I sent in pictures along with a resume and videos and, you know, a real live resume with references of, you know, people who could vouch for me and whatnot. But I got the call and, you know, I was happy to be a part of it. And we did the ballpark shows and, of course, yeah, we went out and did, you know, there were three shows out in Vegas. I was able to do two of those out there, two different times, you know, in July and then again in October.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Let's start the party.
Hey, welcome everyone. A new episode of Shooting the Shiznit live from STS Studios in St. Louis, Missouri. We have episode 91 coming up. A big thank you to Bob McGee at Pro Wrestlers Between the Sheets, Locals to Legends with Gene Jackson, and W2Mnet.com, Sean Garmer. Guys, you can reach me at Comic Book Mark BT. Hey, you want to buy some merch? Help sponsor the show. tinyurl.com/STSPodMerch. You can send a monthly, weekly, daily donation at paypal.com. And my address is Brian_Tramel, T-R-A-M-E-L, @yahoo.com. We are on Stitcher, iTunes, Pod Paradise, Spreaker. You can listen to all the archives on stspod.club. We also have a Facebook page. It is a Shooting a Shiznit Facebook page. I put up all the news and all the episodes up there. Or we have the Cool Kids Wrestling and MMA Talk Facebook group. That is where we talk bullshit, make fun of people. If we don't like you, we'll kick you out. You have to ask to get in first. So, guys, do a search for that group. I want a big shout out to Suplex City Limits, JoJo over there at Creative Control, Who's Right Podcast, one of my favorite non wrestling podcasts, and my buddy Max over at P3 Radio, who we had on, Probe the Pod for the first episode. Hey guys, let's get on with episode 91. Now, here's the show. Before I actually bring him from the green room. We want to talk about numbers. Now, Kenny's listening, but he can only hear me in the green room there. Today, right before we went on the show, right before we went on air to record this, 85,429 downloads. Welcome the King, Kenny Boland.
How you doing?
How's it going, Kenny? Now, we waited a couple months to bring you back on, but gosh, you're every week I'm saying the top five downloads of the week. You'll see, I think we have 1 week since November that we didn't have you there. A big favorite of my listening audience, and as you can tell, it, you know, the not only my listening audience, but everywhere. I mean, people listen to that show that didn't, you know, some of them came back and some of them didn't, but just a huge, huge number.
Well, I've been a little bit, and I appreciate that. I've been doing a couple of shows today, and I just got doing the Bowling Alley After Show, which I never do. I've never done an after show before, but they come up with an idea to do it today because they wanted me to tell the story about how Maya interpreted. You've seen Maya do the Bucket Full of Chicken Necks with me, does a lot of my Bowling Alley shows
with
me. Well, Maya did tonight's Bowling Alley with me and my host, Jason Marshall. We've teased this story 100 times and we never tell it. But he wanted to hear the story about how Maya, as you know, the story about the Wizard of Oz.
Right.
And we had the Scarecrow who had issues. The Cowardly Lion had issues. Tin Man had some serious issues. Dorothy, what she was known for. And then, of course, the man behind the curtain. And then the Wicked Witch. Well, I sent you a link to the Bowling Alley After
Show. You did. I'm going to put it up on our website there. It's video.
I'd already done like an hour and 40 minute show before we did this after show. I didn't want to do no goddamn after show. But I'm so glad we did. Because it's us giving Maya's German interpretation of what the story about the Wizard of Oz is about.
Oh, my God. I'll have to listen. I'm a big Wizard of Oz fan. Folks, go ahead.
You ought to hear what she thought the Three Bears, how the story of the Three Bears and Goldilocks was told in Germany. About basically the goddamn bears were fucking crack dealers. and Goldilocks was just a fucking slut.
And oh, my God.
That's how the story's told in Germany. Well, wait until you hear how... Just watch it. That's all I can.
And I'll put it up on my website. The thing, I'm a huge Wizard of Oz fan, folks.
I haven't watched it in a long time, but now Maya wants to see how the story's really told because you just got to watch tonight's after show.
I will do it. And I'll put it up.
It's something to see and something to hear. So, and of course, I've got it on my Facebook and Twitter pages. You'll have it up for your people, and Jason Marshall's got it. There will be plenty of access to this maybe 10, 12-minute after show that is just unfucking real. So let's get into your business. What do we got?
Well, Kenny, first, you know, is there anything, you know, I know this might surprise everybody, but Kenny likes to sell stuff. So what are we going to sell tonight? Let's put that over and then we'll get to the questions.
We'll touch a couple of things here. The Monster Intunes have been huge. Well, I'm showing them like you can fucking see them.
I can see them. That's all I'm
holding them up. The Monster Intunes have been monster sellers, no pun intended. I guess it was. Those are the headphones of choice that I use on all my shows. Of course, I got the Bowling Media microphones that have been doing real good. We sell those for 50, or did we lower those? Well, we'll say 59, and if I lowered them, you'll be pleasantly surprised.
There you go.
The Monster Intunes list from anywhere from $149 to $199. I've got the Monster Intunes. These are the real deals. These are not knockoffs. Yes, the Beats by Bowling are knockoffs. That's why the wireless are $59 and not $249. But they sound incredible.
Put him over.
That's sad. Yeah.
What kind of headphones are you wearing? I'm looking at those. I don't know if those are Intunes or not.
No, they're not. So we need to talk about that in a good microphone.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that after the show.
All right, we'll do that.
All right, so tell me, you got shirts,
Bowling,
books, what else
that
we
ain't
got?
A Bowling Media microphone either. What the fuck? What have I walked into here? God damn. Doing my cornet.
There you go.
What the fuck? Cornette needs new headphones and microphones, too. He was having some problems over on his show. He was bitching over there about the bad microphones, and he says, yeah, we ain't gonna be like some people over here and just have goddamn microphones and cameras everywhere acting like they're doing a goddamn TV show. Fuck, ain't nobody watching the goddamn show anyway. Barry and me and Russo. Well, me and Russo are about to hit 20 million downloads since I joined the show in October. So October, November, December, January, sneaking up February. That ain't too goddamn bad for a few months.
That's pretty scary, buddy. That's pretty
scary. Well, the Russo Brand Network, not all of those 20
right,
million.
I understand. Yes, sir. Yeah.
But the Russo Brand Network, and I am the number one show on the network. Go figure. So, yeah.
All right. Let's get to the questions. What we did an Ask Kenny, and I ended up with a few
questions. I'll
plug my
intros later. I'll plug the rest of them
later.
All
right. We'll do that after the commercial. I'll let you do another big commercial, all right?
Thank you. Sweet. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So here... Some of the questions are going to be a little off the wall, but heck, you know, that's what the listeners of the Shiz, Who Wants to Be the Best Shiznitter Ever, and Probe the Pod, and Shooting the Shiznit, they're all a little off the wall anyway, so here we go. Tell us a story about you managing Tojo Yamamoto.
Well, it was my first ever time that I managed a wrestling match, and I didn't find out till I got to the building because I was scheduled to be the ring announcer that night. I was also the interviewer. I would do the studio interviews of the wrestlers, which you there's the very first one I ever did is on YouTube. A friend of mine actually recorded it. He lived in Nashville when I was there, and he recorded the first ever interview I did of George and Nick Gulas for WOW Wow World Organization Wrestling. Can't believe I fucking remember it. And I'm sure I did it better now than I did then because I was 27 years old and that was the first time I'd ever done a televised interview. And we did it in one take and I did not want to keep it. I thought I could do better. So I want to do it again. And Nick Goulin, Kenny Bolin, that was a lovely job. You couldn't possibly do that no better. That was perfect. I said, I can do better. I said, why don't we do one more and we'll keep the best going. No, Ms. Bowen, that was a beautiful job. That's a fantastic job. We'll keep that one. I said, well, fuck, you can't argue with Nick Goulin. It's this goddamn show. And so I was scheduled to be in Birmingham, Alabama that night. I lived in Nashville, Tennessee. And I was scheduled to be the ring announcer for all the matches, which was cool. My wife came with me because it was my first paying gig other than doing the studio interviews. It was my first paying gig, and we were real excited about it. 27 years old, my first match, Birmingham, Alabama, doing my first show. And whoever the manager was supposed to be that night didn't show up. And he knew that I wanted to be not only a commentator, but I wanted to be a manager as well. So I go out and ring announce like the first three, four matches, and then we take an intermission. And during the intermission, George Gulas comes back, not Nick, the dad, but George, the son. Nick rarely did the long trips. And he comes back, Kenny Bolin, I got a favor to ask of you. I said, yes, sir. You're doing a fine job with the announcing tonight. How would you like to really help us out and get you a little extra pay? I said, well, what do you want me to do? For the main event, we got Tojo Yamamoto versus Gypsy Joe. I want you to introduce the wrestlers, and you introduce Gypsy Joe first, and then you introduce Tojo, and then you say, and his special manager tonight is me, Kenny the King Bolin. I said, me? I said, how am I going to manage him? I'm a ring announcer. He said, well, tonight you're going to be a ring announcer and you're going to manage Tojo because we don't have a manager for Tojo tonight. We need somebody to interfere to be able to beat Gypsy. I said, really? I said, well, okay. I said, how much more money do I get? You get $25 more. And I think I was getting $75 anyway to be the ring announcer for the whole night. And I said, well, you know, fuck, that's $100 for the night. God damn, there's a lot of people in this business at my level ain't getting $100, so what the hell?
Right, yeah.
So I end up introducing from wherever the fuck he's from, Gypsy Joe and his opponent tonight, coming in at 231 pounds from Tokyo, Japan, Tojo Yamamoto, and in his corner, and there's no one there.
Right.
His manager, Kenny the King Bolin. And I pitched the mic in the middle of the ring, get out, and I stand in the corner. and then go grab a chair from a fan or whatever. There was a chair, and pull up a chair like Sam Bass used to do, and I sat there. And I managed the match, did what I was supposed to do, interfere where I was supposed to interfere. Night's over. It's time to get paid. Well, wouldn't you know it, George was back there doing pay. And we finally get down to the lowly ring announcer and the manager to get paid, and all of a sudden they don't have no money. Well, there's just one problem with that. Tojo gave me his watch to hold during that match, and that watch was worth about $250. And so they didn't pay me, and I wasn't real happy about it. And they start looking around for Tojo's watch. And now, I didn't know Tojo very well at the time.
Right, right.
So I'm thinking, well, you motherfuckers are paying me. I came down here from Nashville to Birmingham. And I don't know what mark you think you were fucking with, but I've been around this business since 1974. I've been trained by the best, the Jarretts, the Lawlers, the Dundees. I know my shit. You ain't fucking with me. And I did everything I was asked to do. And without me, you got nobody to introduce fucking wrestlers. And without me, you didn't have anybody to manage. Now, I'm thinking all this to myself. I ain't saying shit to nobody.
Right, right.
I just realized I'm not getting paid. So I got Tojo's watch in my fucking pocket. And everybody's looking around trying to find Tojo's watch. And I don't see it. So I go home and I got Tojo's watch. And I said, well, I tell you what, when I get paid my goddamn money, Tojo's watch will turn up. Well, I never got my $100 for that show, and that watch never turned up. But I felt bad about that because me and Tojo turned out to be pretty good friends. And I never did give him his watch back because I wanted paid for that fucking night's work. And it was a real nice a Seiko or something like that. It was about a $250 watch, whatever it was. And I figured Tojo could buy another one.
Well, I never knew you had managed him, and someone had said, ask him about that story, and you'll enjoy
that
one.
Yeah, he was the first wrestler I ever managed in November of 1987.
Jesus, yeah. I was just a young buck at that time, so.
Yeah.
All right, here's the second question. You probably done this on a gazillion other podcasts, but my audience wants to know either the best or one you've never told, a John Cena story.
A John Cena story. One I've never told.
Tell us the best one.
I've talked about his addiction to porn. I've talked about how Mickey James dumped him for a jobber. All right, here's one. I mean, it's not a real fascinating story, but John Cena, number one, claims that he never done steroids. My son says he knows John's dealer. So, depends who you want to believe. I kind of lean towards my son. But regardless whether he did or didn't, because I never saw it, but whether he did or didn't, John had the weirdest fucking diet that ever was. He would do the protein shakes and all this shit, and he'd be real strict for like 5 or 6 days and would never go off his diet. And then there's other times that one, his cheat day, as he called it, and Rico Constantino did the same thing. On his cheat day, he might eat, well, he came over to my house once and we did Raw, and he ate 2 large pizzas because I got free pizzas from Papa John's. And even though they were making $750 a week, they had their travel money and their, you know, their bills and expenses and everything. So they saved every buck they could.
Sure.
So they didn't mind me hooking them up with free meals. So Cena says, well, you know, I'll save dinner. I'll go over and eat at Bowen's and eat like a pig over there. So he comes over and eats 2 large pizzas. And I thought that was pretty impressive because I can't do it to this day. I might be able to eat 1 large pizza if I'm fucking starved. He ate 2. But I guess if you don't eat for 6 fucking days, you'll eat 2 large pizzas. So I thought that was pretty amazing. And then we have a WrestleMania party over at Danny Davis's house. And all of us guys are over there, Cena and Mark Henry and, you know, everybody that hasn't been called up yet. Sylvester Turkey, Rico Constantino, Brock Lesnar. I mean, just all Randy Orton, everybody that's now huge names in the WWE. We're all over Danny Davis's house, and none of them been called up. Well, Danny ordered, God, I think 500 chicken wings from, what's the name of them? BW3s. Pretty good chicken wings. 500 of them. And he was pretty goddamn sure that was going to be enough to feed us all. Until one thing got factored in. John Cena who, it was his cheat day, and he scheduled that way so he could eat what he wanted at the thing. He ate 100, swear to God, 133 BW3 chicken wings.
Jesus Christ.
Which left 300 and something for the rest of us. 370, give or take. But yeah, I think the exact number was 136 chicken wings. Can you fucking imagine?
No, I can't. I'm a fat boy, Kenny. You know I am. And I like eating, but, you know, that's large pizza,
my record at Hooters, because they have all you can eat chicken wings there two nights a week, Mondays and Wednesdays.
See you come in and say, oh, hell.
Yeah. And I eat free there, by the way. My record for many years is 30. Maybe 35. Right. It's not over 35. I'll promise you that. 35. John
Cena. So he ate 100 more than you could eat.
He ate 100 and, yeah, right at 100 and one more than I could eat. John Cena.
There you go, folks. There's just some John Cena.
And I don't think I've ever told that story on any podcast. So there you go. You've got a scoop. Deal. You have. Fuck you. You heard it again.
All right. Let's take a quick commercial. We're going to be right back with Kenny.
I better get money out of this.
NFLShop.com is the official online store for the National Football League. It offers the biggest selection of officially licensed NFL merchandise online. Shoppers looking for jerseys, the Game Day Collection apparel by Nike, and headwear from New Era will find what they want from all 32 teams at NFLShop.com. The season may be over, but you can still get all of your division-winning shirts as well as Super Bowl apparel right now if you go there visiting them with our link, tinyurl.com/STSNFLShop. STSNFLShop. Shopping there with this link will cost you nothing extra, but will help support this podcast. Now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with the King. How long were you with OVW? We got a couple OVW questions here.
Couple OVW questions. I started in November of 1996. And I retired in September of 2012. So however fucking long that is.
Wow. And you know, we talked about you, upcoming episode about your commentary.
About 17, 18 years, I guess, give or take.
And that was a question. What happened? Why did we leave OVW?
Why did I leave? Well, for a couple of reasons. One, the show started sucking. Because our deal was over with WWE, our deal was over with TNA, and let's face it, the talent pool had dropped off substantially. But not so much because TNA and WWE went away, is that we had monkeys running the circus instead of the zookeeper running the circus, the zookeeper being Danny Davis. Well, he put the monkeys in charge, and the monkeys didn't know what the fuck they were doing. They knew how to sling shit and eat bananas. That's what monkeys do. And when you put monkeys in charge of running the circus, you get what you pay for. And that's what OVW turned into, is that we had a guy, I'm not even going to say his goddamn name, but everybody that was there knows who it was. And he alienated a lot of good talent, and that talent started leaving one by one because they didn't want to deal with him. And I was among them, and my son was among them, and the wrestlers that he managed was among them. And Pat Buck and his partner left, and then a couple others that were pretty good left. And then I just told Danny that my health was getting bad and I just couldn't do this anymore. And I was moving out of state because I didn't have the heart to tell him how bad the fucking show was. And I was embarrassed to sit out there and do commentary on it. Then about 3 weeks later, my son and his group said, you know, we're not going to be a part of this shit anymore. You know, we're not going to listen to this dumb fuck who doesn't know what he's doing. Danny doesn't give a shit. Danny don't even watch the goddamn matches. So one by one, anybody that had any talent from there went away. And then I was in the hospital for an extended period of time. And Dean Hill and Trailer Park Trash, he was the one that was booking that nobody could fucking stand. And he eventually was ran out of there. And they kept coming down to see me at the hospital, but what it was, they wanted to make sure that I didn't come back. They wanted to make sure, because me and Chris were smartening everybody up to, like, hey, this dumb fuck don't know what the fuck he's doing. We'll just do our own shit, you know, just ignore him. So Chris actually started booking matches that were selling, well, a sellout then was like 330 people. When I started, it was 550, and then, you know, they kept dwindling the seats due to the fire marshal. And but they wanted to make sure that me and Chris were nowhere near that building because we were smartening people up. Hey, these stupid fucks don't know what they're doing. Listen to the people who've been around for 20, 30 years and let us guide you. And then he can take credit for it. We don't give a shit. And Al Snow was there for a period of that time, too. And Al was doing what he could. But Al will be the first to tell you that he's not a booker, even though he got some good shows when he came in there because he had some talent to work with. But as all the talent goes, I mean, you're only as good as the talent you've got to work with.
Right.
And so, you know, I ended up going, and then I basically got so aggravated and fed up with all of them. I said, well, if that's how they feel and they don't want me and my son smartening everybody up, then we'll just never fucking go back. And none of us did. None of us. That's been 6 years now, and not a one of us ever set foot back in there again. So that was kind of how.
Is Danny still ahead of everything, or has he got someone else doing his stuff?
Danny, shit, even when Cornette was there, Danny didn't really want to do anything other than record the show. He didn't want to do anything.
Right.
And Danny, so from what I've heard, Danny's moved to Florida, and he acted like he sold half of it to Dean Hill, but that never happened. That's just all bullshit for television. And he sits in Florida and collects whatever profits come in, if there is any. I don't even know there is any. That might be why he left. And last I heard, Danny Davis was working security at a hospital and then trying to keep OVW afloat. And then someone told me he recently moved to Florida with him and his wife. So I don't know. I don't keep up with any of them. I don't really speak to any of them. Joe Wheeler contacted me the other day, wanted to know if I could get him an autographed picture of the Hardys. And I told him, yeah. I said, because you're the only goddamn one left there that I think I speak to out of that original group. And he and I are both in the Hall of Fame. There's only five members in it. Me, I think Dean Hill, Joe Wheeler, Cornette, and I can't even remember, Danny Davis.
There you go.
There's only five people in the history of the company that are in their Hall of Fame. And so there's been countless reunion shows. They just had a 20-year reunion show, and not one of the old stars came back. I don't know that any of them were invited. I know goddamn well I wasn't, and they know it wouldn't have done no good if they did. Because I told them I'll never set foot in there again, because when Rico got sick, this is what led to me never wanting to associate with him again. When Rico was real bad sick, and I was trying to raise money for him, I went to Danny Davis and Dean for two reasons. One, I was going to make, because I heard Dean Hill was going to retire, but he never did. And I was going to do four last shows with Dean Hill, and I was going to do, and then we were going to both walk out the door together, because Dean and I did more broadcasts together than any announcer combination they ever had. And so that was going to be the plan. I was going to do four last shows, and I was going to ask Danny and Dean and any of the guys there that actually had jobs and money to donate to Rico's deal. And then Danny says, well, none of these guys have any money. You know that. Well, no, they don't, because you take it all, getting every fucking dime you can get out of them to go through these wrestling schools. I said, but some of you here actually work and have some money, but I expect some of y'all to help Rico out. He needs our help. Well, they told me to come down, and they was going to donate $100 each. Well, you know, we were trying to raise 10 grand. A couple hundred bucks helps. I drive down to the arena, meet some fans in the parking lot. Dean Hill comes out. Danny and I decided we're not going to donate. Yeah, why is that? Well, we've heard some things about Rico we're not real comfortable with, and we're just not going to donate. Well, I knew what they were referring to, and it was a difference that came up between Vince McMahon and Rico that was bullshit. It was a lie. And a lot of the wrestlers that knew Rico shot it down, said it was bullshit and it was a lie. I won't get into it here because it was a fucking lie. But so they hear these innuendos about Rico, who was a brother of ours, who is near death at that time. And they refused to help him. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. And I got home. I wrote Dean Hill a letter. And he writes me and says, well, we're going to think about it. I said, no, you don't need to think about it. He's one of our brothers. And if you got to think about it, then fuck you. Keep your goddamn money. Shove it up your ass. Tell Danny Davis to do the same. And I will raise the 10 grand without you. Fuck you all. And I'll never speak to any of you again. I blocked Danny. I blocked Dean Hill. Trailer Park Trash. I blocked every one of those son bitches. Didn't give a fuck if I ever saw or heard from them again. And that's how it stood to this day. I could have cared fucking less if I ever ran into any of them again. Because if you're going to turn your back on Rico, who made all of us a fair amount of money while he was there, and then he's fucking down, and $100 is going to help him out, help put food on his table, pay for his medications, keep his rent paid. And we raised the $10,000 without him. We raised him, I think, a total of about $13,000.
Awesome,
and Cauliflower Alley helped us out, but OVW wouldn't. So fuck them. Kind of how I feel about it. Still do. Cornette did reluctantly donate $100. It took a while to get it out of him, but he knew I was going to never speak to him again if he didn't, because I told him that's why I wasn't speaking to Danny or Dean. So two or three weeks later, he brought $100 cash over to the house and handed it to me. He says, I assume this will make it into Rico's hands. I said, yeah, I'm going to fuck Rico, just like Danny and Dean Hill did. And I said, he will know that the $100 was donated and that you gave it, and in which I contacted Rico and said, hey, you got an extra $100 coming to your bank account today because Jimmy Cornette come by here and donated $100. So, no, I got no reason to lie about it. Jimmy donated, and you know, we've had our differences. But I think he wanted to take the side of Dean and Danny. So he had a choice to make, take their side, and well, I'll just add you to the list. And little did I know that I'd never be speaking to him about a year or two later. So I guess the writing was on the wall.
Right, right. Now, talking about OVW, I have another OVW question. Was there anybody that you managed or you seen at OVW that you said, this guy's going to be a huge star, he's going to be the man, you know, the next coming of John Cena, but he never did. He just fizzled. Is there somebody there?
I didn't really say that. We knew that Cena was about it. Even though Vince McMahon didn't see any talent in Cena, I did, and Danny did, and Jimmy did. And Vince wanted to let him go. And we had to save not only Rico Constantino's job, but we had to save Cena's job. Because Vince didn't get it, and he admitted on the first Cena DVD. He admitted, I didn't get it. I'm on that DVD, so is Danny Davis. We admitted that we knew he had talent, but Vince actually admitted on there, I didn't get it. I was done with him. I did not get him. So, but no, as far as the next, probably the one that should have done it that didn't, but I'm not going to say I knew he was because he had his issues when he was at OVW, and I think he'll be the first to tell you that he had some problems that he needed to deal with. But to me, the next one who had the look, the ability, the promo, was Rene Dupree. And a lot of people tell you that I didn't like Rene Dupree too much. At that time, I didn't. He wasn't taking his craft seriously. He had some issues, which I think everybody can figure out what I'm talking about without me shedding any more light onto it, because I hear he's doing better now. He married an Asian girl, which good boy, because the Asian girls are the best. My all my girlfriends are Asian, and all nine of them. I got a goddamn child support's getting ugly, so I rooted for Renee. I thought, as far as God given ability, and plus he had a wrestling background, which Cena did not have. Cena was brand new to it. He just had what it took. He had it. And I thought Rene Dupree did too, but it just didn't gel for Rene. I don't know why. Rob Conway was another one that probably should have got more out of WWE than he got. Nick Dinsmore was going to, but he had issues that fucked him up because he had that Eugene thing over. I can't take credit for Eugene. I had nothing to do with that, but I did manage him. I managed Rob. Rico should have had a longer longevity there than he had, but I thought he did good with, you know, he got 5 years there. That's five more than a lot of other people got.
Amen.
But probably Rene Dupree is the one who should have been the next Cena, even though Cena hadn't really been around that long then. But he should have had, in my opinion, as good a career. I mean, if all those other guys are there now, Dolph Ziggler, who I managed, The Miz, who I managed, Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, all those guys. Rene Dupree should still be there too. But he had some serious issues, and I hope they got better. I don't know for a fact they did or didn't, but I see him on Facebook every now and then, and he's ended up on some shows I was on. And he seems to be doing better in a better place, and I hope so. I mean, I don't wish bad on any of these guys.
Good deal, good deal. That's a great. I mean, of all the guys that went through OVW, there were some guys that, you know, that I actually personally knew. Derek King was one of them that I always thought he did some stuff in Memphis.
Derek was never under contract, but Derek is for what he did was awfully damn good at it. I
very
don't
much
know.
So. Yeah.
He would have probably never been any more than job guy status, because he'd been around a while by the time he was at OVW. He'd already had a hell of a run in Memphis.
Right,
and,
right.
I don't know that the WWE would have made any more than a job guy out of him, but Derek could do about whatever you gave him to do, and was an excellent talent.
But he always
he was more at mimicking other talents by this time.
But he was
in OVW for quite a while with us, but I don't recall him ever having an actual WWE contract. I don't think he did.
I don't think he did either. He worked. He worked a couple of shows.
He's
a hell of
a guy. He's a dear friend of mine. He's a dear friend of mine and has been for quite some time.
Great talent. You know, like I said, he worked one of my first shows I ever promoted, and there was a snake in the building, and I want to tell you.
Yeah, Mark Henry's another one. Don't like snakes. Mark Henry will cry if he sees a snake. He don't like
goodness. It. Yeah.
He saw one on my first big screen TV I bought was a 60-inch Mitsubishi, the old box type, if you remember. And Mark was over, and we're watching Animal Planet or something, and there's this big-ass goddamn python on my brand-new Mitsubishi big screen TV that we're bragging about and showing off to him. And he was scared, begging me to turn it off. I said, Mark's a goddamn television. You know, the snake ain't going to bite you. Turn the thing off, Bowling, and we wouldn't do it. Now we're laughing at him. Because there's me and my 12-year-old son, 13-year-old son, laughing at Mark Henry because he's scared of a goddamn snake on television. And he ran out to his car. He had a Porsche. He's out of his car crying his eyes out because he is terrified of that damn snake. We had to tell him how sorry we was that we didn't realize he had a fear of snakes like that, but he did. And I felt real bad about that when I got done laughing.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, there's. I can't think of anything I'm that scared of.
Cornette was terrified of snakes, too. He had to do a bit with Jake Roberts with the snake in the ring, and they didn't tell him ahead of time how it was going to go because they knew he wouldn't do it, and they wanted the live reaction of Jimmy shitting his pants when Jake brought that snake out, and Jimmy wasn't happy about that. He was not very happy about doing that snake bit. I don't think he ever did another one either.
I don't like snakes, but they don't scare me to that, you know. I don't want them biting me. So
on the snake. I mean, if there's a goddamn rattler in my room right now, he will have to eat about 41 pounds of shit before he's going to get near me. So.
All right, we got one silly question for the night, and then I'm going to let you put your stuff over, and we're going to call it over with. We went over a little bit over the 30 minutes.
Called time of death. Huh?
Yeah, time of death. Here we go now. We got this in from one of the listeners. Who could win a Sprite drinking contest, you or Cornette?
So are we talking total number of Sprites in a 24-hour period? What
there
are we talking?
Go. Let's do that. Total number of Sprites.
Total number of Sprites in a 24-hour period. You know what? I actually think it would be a draw. Because I think I can drink them just as fast as he can. But through natural addiction, he drinks probably a 12-pack a day. Jesus. I know when he goes out to buy them, he buys like four 24-packs. When I go out, I buy four 12-packs. Those four 12-packs, I drink 3 to 4 a day on average. I'm not that there's not some days I drink more, but I try to keep it to between 3 and 4 maximum a day. Because I also drink a lot of the bottled waters, especially since I had the health issues. So an ideal day is 2 canned soft drinks and 2 or 3 of my big bottled flavored waters that I drink. But if I don't have any, if I'm just not in the mood for the bottled water, I'll do 4 a day. Cornette does no less than 6 a day. And if he's driving somewhere and it's a hot day, he'll knock out 12 in a fucking heartbeat. And if he's doing a show, and hell, he'll knock out 3-4 on the way there, 4 to 6 while he's there, couple 3 more at the hotel, and maybe 4 or 5 more on the way home. I mean, he can knock out 12 to 15 without too much fucking trouble in a day.
That's so crazy. Now, you know, I drink.
If it was a competition, if it was a 24-hour competition, I'd give him a run for his money. But there through natural consumption, Jimmy kills me.
I used to drink three diet 2 liters a day. I used to drink.
Holy shit. Goddamn. Yeah.
But I only drink two glasses of now, so I am down. Got all right, back. Kenny, let's put your stuff over. Put some more of your stuff over, and we'll all get right. out of here.
These aren't for sale, but a fan made me these. Aaron Halliday, who got my show on Monday, got a big banner on Monday Night Raw here a while back. Did you see the pictures of that? That big bowling
right,
club.
Right, right, the bowling club. But yeah.
Mr. Halliday made that, and he also made me these coasters out of the kindness of his heart and sent them to me, so I just wanted to put that over. We got the Bowling Club magnet. You order enough shit, then I sent. And I'm showing these up to this camera.
Yeah,
you
he's
got
showing the camera. The magnet is a small magnet. Go in the refrigerator there with the cow.
Yeah, about a 4x4 magnet. It's got the Bowling Club logo and the BS Classic logo and all 12 months. So you can figure out where the fuck you got to go and win. the big thing I'm pushing right now, the Monster Intunes. These are the headphone of choice. They don't pay us to use these. We buy these damn things because we love them and use them. We were going to buy Beats, but we found out that Monster Intunes made the original Beats, not this shit that Apple makes now. And we discovered that the Monster Intunes sound better than the Beats. Certainly much better bass. And we discovered this about 6 years ago. So we started using them on the show and thought it was, and we were paying $150-$200 a pop for these damn things. And, but we, you know, I bought mine, Rob Dickin bought his, my son bought his. So we had about $600 wrapped up in Monster Intunes. And then my distributor, Shinsuke Nakamura, he, now, and he gets me my Beats by Bowling, and some fan on YouTube here not long ago said, well, don't the fans know that them Beats are just goddamn knockoffs? I said, yeah, you stupid motherfucker. That's why my Beats cost my wireless Beats cost $59.95. And the real ones cost $249, you dumb fuck. Of course they know they're knockoffs. But none of my other shit is. The shirts are real. How fake can a goddamn shirt be? the hats are real. The Bowling Club hats, the BS hats. Just got a new shipment of those in. We sold out of our first four shipments of the Bowling Club shirts and the Bowling Club hats. But I just got in new shirts, just got in new hats. We also had the comic book shirt that was real popular that Simon Williams from Wales, who is a Marvel comics artist. He drew that comic book shirt
loved
of me.
Love that. Absolutely love that. Yeah, and then you got one with Cena and Russo on it, too.
Yes, awesome. We got one with Cena and Russo. We haven't made it into a shirt yet, but once we sell out of the current stock of shirts we've got, we probably will. And if nothing else, I might have those made into maybe a couple hundred pictures, and we'll sell those autographed for maybe $8 or $10 or something. And so people can get that picture as well with Russo, where Russo replaces Cornette. Fuck me over, you get replaced. and of course, the Beats by Bowling, they're $59.95. The Monster Intune, $79.95. You can pay up to $200 easy for these. I've got eight colors. The green, my son may not let go. I've got the orange, the white, the yellow, the red, and the lavender. The lavender's gorgeous. And the cobalt blue. And so we got eight colors of those. The green, I don't know if my son will let go, but everything else is available to you. $79.95. The lavender you can't find for under $149. I can send you the clip on Amazon right now. That if you want the lavender Monster Intune headphones, because some colors cost more than others. The Midnight Black I've seen go as high as $400. Those
wow,
are the ones.
Wow. Well, tell them how they. What? Where's the website? Tell them the website. We're running almost out of recording website?
You can go to Twitter and go to the left side of my Twitter page and click the store. I don't. It's something Beats by Bowling.
And your Twitter handle is what's your Twitter handle?
At Starmaker Bowling, and Facebook is backslash Starmaker Bowling. Very
all
easy
right.
to find.
Hey, Kenny, I want to thank you very much for coming on. I want to thank the listeners. I want to thank our sponsors. Y'all guys go out and buy some merch there from Kenny. We appreciate you coming back on. We hope you break the record again. Guys,
yeah, 100,000 this time. 100,000.
There we go. Guys, we'll be here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
That's
the best little wrestling podcast in the business.
You know, you know that Russo signs off all his shows? Russo.